Consumers have the hardest job here. They are carrying the guilt of what to do with the package when it gets to the end of its useful life. And if you watch someone standing in front of a three-bin system, oftentimes it's like a pop quiz. We can debate what percentage of plastic escapes into the environment, but the reality is that every bit of it is a billboard for the people that come next to say, that needs to stop. The final frontier is the drive-through window. How to create a reuse system that will incorporate cars and vehicles and pickup and drop-off and just all of the many things that can happen out in the real world.
This is the ProCo 360 podcast for people who love Colorado and love hearing from Colorado's most inventive and successful entrepreneurs. I'm Dave Tabor, and this episode is with Ian Jacobson, president of EcoProducts. You may not know the company, but you've used its products, compostable food utensils, containers, cups, and lids. I'm interested in this company, well, of course, because they're based in Colorado, also because I'm curious about the zero waste industry. I've long been, and there are a few things on my list, Ian, that I'm curious about. Like, first of all, how are these products made? How much more do compostable products cost? And how much more do we need? Are we willing to pay for them as consumers? Also, what I'm really curious about is, if I'm drinking out of a compostable cup, do I have to hurry? So those questions and more. Ian, I'm glad you're with me on ProCo 360.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks so much.
Yeah. So I gave you a quick overview of your company. I'm sure you can give a much better one. Tell us about EcoProducts.
Yeah. EcoProducts is a Colorado success story at the core. It was a father-son box truck distribution business started in Boulder, Colorado in 1990, if you can believe that, selling everything from low VOC paints to recycled office paper and recycled toilet paper. Recycled content. Thank you very much.
Right,
you corrected me.
All right,
this is an industry in which words matter, yes. And so I'm guilty right out of the bat of missing that one. They began as just anything they could think of that had an environmental attribute to it as a distribution business. And over time, the green building products business grew quite successfully, and food service came late, but came fast. And the growth that they experienced as a result of selling a compostable cup through distribution was striking.
So it started with a compostable cup?
Yeah, well, it started with a range of compostable food service offerings, and it was a segment of, as I mentioned, a much larger distribution business that quickly became a one-stop shop, and that was the key. Yeah.
So when we use the word compostable, what does it really mean, or at least what does it mean to you?
Sure. Compostability ultimately is nature at work, right? When we think about the microbial population that's active in the forest, when a tree falls, it's not like little workers go to work. Well, in fact, you can think about them like little workers, but how we break down organic material into soil is a natural biological process.
Yeah.
How we make food service packaging perform the way something that fell in the forest would is the trick. So the way we'll do this, and your question is, what is compostable? Compostable can be defined by what we call the Biodegradable Products Institute. There's various standards that will say, will this product break down within certain time frames in certain areas?
Yeah, what are those time frames? Like, if something is stuck, if you drop it on the ground, how long does it have to break down to be defined as compostable?
So if we're talking about fruit, something that fell in your garden, you can observe how that will break down.
Nature
does its work quickly.
Yeah.
If we're talking about harder things like paper, like wood, like an avocado pit, these are things that require certain conditions for nature to get at after it. Otherwise, it'd be resilient. So what we rely on are commercial composting facilities, which effectively are, think about very large yard waste processing piles.
So you're thinking, for your products to be compostable, you're really thinking of them in the context of a defined condition.
Absolutely.
Set up.
Yes.
An industrial setup to encourage composting.
Yes.
I got it.
Which is the answer to your question about how long do I have when I pour it in the cup? Again, heat, temperature matters, moisture content matters, and ultimately that microbial population is, depending on the material, will get active at different temperatures and different conditions.
That really gets to sort of the heart of some of the things I wanted to talk with you about, which is, you know, I mean, if you take and I'm holding, you know, products that you brought in, and they look very similar to other kinds of products, but if you just take one and drop it in a plastic bag and haul it off to the to the dump, it never will compost, right? I mean,
it's going to act just like any other piece of plastic.
So these products are designed to compost within a contained. So they have to, like, basically, they have to be taken to a place specifically designed to help them compost.
Yeah. And so that's why the certification is commercially compostable.
Ah,
which
got
is
it.
A key modifier.
And so that's, is that why some of your, or really your whole focus in your marketplace is industrial sort of food service places, places where, you know, people use these products and put them where they belong before they leave.
Absolutely. We believe in a system solution, right? Much of eco products is built around how do we tackle issues of waste? And from a climate perspective, the most important waste to tackle is food waste. The issue that we face is food waste in the landfill will break down in the absence of oxygen and will generate methane, which is one of the most harmful greenhouse gases that we know of. Mm-hmm. And so the goal is to get the food waste to a compost facility. In pursuit of that goal, we use compostable packaging in these controlled environments like Red Rocks, like a stadium, like Vail Resorts, where we'll commit to a system that says, and again, stadiums are perfect, right? As long as you control what goes into a facility, you should be able to control what goes out.
Yeah, yeah.
And that degree of predictability allows you to optimize around recycling and composting and send as little as possible to landfill.
So you're really, you've got this contained audience, you know, if it's Red Rocks or if it's a stadium or it's a cafeteria, whatever. And then you've got these receptacles that you've designed specifically to take your waste. Compostable waste. And that's what keeps this cycle working, right?
That's the first step. And the most important part is having good processes to make sure that we're minimizing contamination.
Because
you mentioned something that was important, which is that if we put our product out on a table, unless it's been properly printed or color-coded in some way, it's going to look just like the plastic piece that it's intended to replace.
Yeah.
And that risk of contamination is, frankly, it's a fundamental threat to the value proposition of compostable packaging.
Yeah, I was intrigued by that. I saw a video on your website, and someone was, and actually from, I think it was from A1 Organics, whom I know as well, a big company just north of Denver that's making compost.
Largest in the Front Range.
And he's talking about the real challenges of having contaminated compost. And
for sure.
And talk about that. And what, because, you know, I always think like, okay, I don't know, is this compostable or not? Well, I'll put it in there and they'll figure it out.
Yeah.
That's exactly the wrong answer, isn't it?
It is. And part of that, consumers have the hardest job here. They are carrying the guilt of what to do with the package when it gets to the end of its useful life. And if you watch someone standing in front of a 3-bin system, oftentimes it's like a pop quiz.
Yes, I don't know. And I don't.
How they make that decision, and particularly in a concert environment, house lights go down, they just want to get back to the seat.
Yeah.
And more often than not, they're going to pick whichever bin is most convenient and then move on. Uh-huh. So here's where we hit the piece where have we created a system in which we can either sort that material after the fact or ensure the fact that that consumer was only given compostable packaging so that we can rely on the fact that
no matter what they get.
Because the composter is the last step in the line. And this is where it's fundamentally different from recycling, right? What we describe as recycling is really just collection, right? We conflate those two concepts. Most of what hits your recycling bin has to go to a secondary processing facility where
it's
sorted.
Yeah.
And then ultimately sold to people who will probably sort it again before they're finding somebody who can actually use it in new packaging. And so those multiple steps of touch and process don't exist for the composter.
Got it. It sounds like your job is way harder even than the recyclers, is it?
Well, again, when we think about how hard it is to truly recycle a plastic, I don't think it's any harder. Hmm. I think in many respects, it's easier. And the reason is, if I think about post-consumer plastic, I have to incent the consumer at some level to get it into the right bin. I have to then haul it, pay somebody to process it, pay somebody to then put it into a manufacturing environment. And then a brand owner has to say, I'll pay a premium
for that
post-consumer recycled content.
Yeah.
We don't have to incent the microbial population, right? The bugs in the compost pile are going to eat that cup as long as it gets to the pile. That's a much shorter list of stakeholders to engage.
But it seems, forgive me, this is going to sound horrible. It just seems like so much damn work.
Yeah.
And when you think about how much of a difference you're making,
sure,
you know, and I And I think this is wonderful. It works. And I've been to A1 Organics. I've seen this beautiful compost.
Yeah.
And then you look at videos and you see all this plastic washing up on shore, and you go down the street and you see all this garbage. Like, are we making a dent?
That's a really good question. And there's, when you say what's easy, we know it's easy. What's easy is landfill. And yeah, landfill has consequences, right? That's really the focus, is to say, and we can debate the impact of composting plastic versus landfilling a more efficient plastic. Composting a PLA, which is the polylactic acid that we make our cups from, versus just making the lightest weight plastic possible, using it once and landfilling it. We can have a hearty debate over which has a less of an impact from an environmental perspective.
Huh.
It's when you introduce the food waste that it becomes definitive. The better answer is getting the food waste. And keep in mind, cover a piece of plastic in nacho cheese in a stadium environment, that plastic will never be recycled, right? It just is going to blow all the value to try to clean it.
Yeah.
So once you've introduced food to the plastic,
it's
a whole different set of considerations.
Mm. Well, and one of the stats I found on your site was that there's more food waste than anything else in landfills. That blew me away. I think of mattresses. I think of all kinds of
stuff.
And there's more food waste.
It's true. Yeah. From a weight perspective, that's going to trigger. But yeah, the municipal solid waste audits are pretty clear on this point.
And I see people, like neighbors, have like a little bucket of compost in front of their house and they pay somebody to come get it. I mean, that just seems so, you know, unscalable.
Scale is absolutely the issue. And this is where we rely on systems.
Yeah.
Right. Because again, I think if you're at Red Rocks or if you're up in Vail and you watch, if you set the system to do the work, it becomes easy.
That makes perfect sense. And so I can see why you have targeted your customer to where there's high volume and in the ability to create a system, a closed system that customers can see, they can recognize, and they can use it easily.
Absolutely.
That makes sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Have I got it kind of figured out from your perspective?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We call it the system solution. And again, it's controlled venues where this is just the obvious choice. Honestly, when you think about how hard the alternatives are, just having that consistency of the material type.
All right. Well, let's talk about your products.
Sure. And
they're beautiful. I'm looking at them now. They've got your brand sort of embossed on them and everything. Are they hard to make?
Really, again, one of the challenges when we talk about our products is that we begin with a blank slate. If we can come up at Eco Products, if we can come up with an idea of how to do things better than the status quo, it's on the table and we're going to pursue it. So sitting here in front of us, we have molded pulp items that are made from bagasse fibers or sugarcane. We have paper that's been lined with PLA plastic. You're holding a clear PLA polylactic acid cold cup.
It feels and looks just like plastic.
It sure does.
But it'll decompose.
It will.
Huh.
It
what
will.
Is polylactic acid?
So it's effectively, it's a genius invention that came from concerns around the end of corn syrup, right? When you think about how we break that corn kernel into starches and other forms of sucrose and dextrose, the geniuses at Cargill were able to say, hey, what else can we make?
Wow.
And
that's
so they
pretty
were
cool.
able to
so
make
So that came
this,
from Cargill, not a company you would think of as, you know, necessarily designing compostable products.
I think they're phenomenally resourceful. Again,
that's cool.
And it's oftentimes we speculate, what would the world be like if you didn't have that focus on R&D?
Cool.
Right?
Hey, let's take a quick break. You're listening to ProCo 360, named Best Colorado Business Podcast the last 3 years. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is the podcast for people who love Colorado and the stories of Colorado businesses and entrepreneurs. My guest today is Ian Jacobson, president of Eco Products. Hey, I want to thank our sponsors, Kinsley Meetings, and Kinsley Meetings is our longest running sponsor. Really appreciate them. They have a great reputation for managing complex meetings all over the world with lots of moving parts. I hope they can help you. Also, Via Technologies, really appreciate them hosting ProCo 360 and all the great help their team gives me around managing the website. Colorado Biz Magazine, where we're building our audiences together. Finally, Denver Angels, and we've been partnering to feature great Colorado companies. Hey, go to ProCo360.com and check out these partners. Back to you, Ian. I want to talk about cost.
Sure.
Because, you know, compare cost of like this clamshell container or this what looks like, can I call it a plastic cup?
Sure.
I mean, what's the cost variance?
Compared to what? Right. I think that's the key piece, right? So if we take a clear cup to a clear cup, it's still going to be, and I'm holding the PLA cup. If you had a PET cup here, it's going to be double digits, but in the, you know, call it 10, 15%, right? We narrow that gap with regularity. If you compare it to foam, EPS, mm-hmm. it's going to be a multiple, right? That's where we talk about the debate around
So what's this cost? What's this cost, this cup? Is it a penny? Is it a nickel?
It depends on how you're going to get it. But all those questions. But let's move on.
Oh, okay.
So we're not going to.
All right. So we won't talk about that.
I'll talk about it directionally.
But it's a multiple, and so
a multiple from a foam cup.
Yeah, and so from the cheapest alternative.
Yeah.
And so you know what we don't really consider in cost, and certainly when companies buy these products, they're not being charged for the externalities, the mega impact on the world and on society and on the environment or any of these things. They're just paying for the cup.
Correct.
So I suppose if you were to add externalities, then you become quite cost competitive.
Yeah. And again, externalities are an abstraction. What's real is litter. And when we think about why is foam the bad guy, it's because it's very light. It's so the ability to become airborne, the ability to float. And no matter where you live in the world, if the plastic gets loose in the environment, it is on a slow, steady march to the ocean. Mm. It's just a function of time. So that fragmentation, the rainfall, this is the consequence. And we can debate what percentage of plastic escapes into the environment. But the reality is that every bit of it is a billboard for the people that come next to say that needs to stop. Hmm. So when we say, do we have a problem? The problem is not a plastics problem. It's a litter problem. It's a waste problem, right? Again, plastics does things that really no other material on earth can do in terms of food, keeping it fresh, right? The oxygen barrier, lightness of transportation. If we were to try to move everything into glass, the amount of wastage and just the fuel costs to move that thing around just would not work, would not be sustainable. So we're finding ourselves environmentally dealing with trade-offs, which is always the case, and particularly those that we're weighing at EcoProducts.
So when you think about the trade-offs, there are those trade-offs you just described. There's also consumer sentiment.
Sure.
You know, the just pressure, flat on pressure from consumers to stop waste, to stop pollution, to stop foam cups from blowing into the ocean. You know, what role do you think consumers, like just their visceral sense of stop, compares to other factors that are at play here?
Yeah. Well, it fundamentally begins with a consumer. And that's really what we're seeing play out, because where goes the consumer, so goes brands, and so goes legislation. And so when we think about the things that are changing the environment for packaging today, legislation and CPG commitments to their stakeholders are the 1A and 1B. Mm-hmm. And so why? It's because consumers care. And again, I'm going to go back to the billboard argument and to the statement I made earlier on, is that there is an inherent guilt. And I think we came out of COVID with that, right? We were in our... stuck in our houses. We suddenly had a tactile relationship to everything we threw away. There was no bin on the corner. There was no bin under the desk. It was the bin in your house. And you watched how fast it filled. And everything was to go. You watched how fast it filled. And if you were paying attention, you realized how little of that was actually accepted in the recycling bin. And so these are consequences.
You really think COVID created a heightened sense of awareness?
I do. And we talked about this. The industry did talk about this. This relationship to waste changed.
Wow.
Especially household waste.
That's, well, because we're living with it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it was not somebody else's job.
That's very interesting. Now, you were sharing with me, and by the way, EcoProducts is a brand owned within a larger family of brands. And you sent me a notice about this product, how do you say it?
Well, that's the O2Go container by OZ.
Okay, by OZ. It's another brand within the family.
Yep.
How does, and so that brings up the whole question of sort of a, I guess, a continuum of better for the environment containers. That's how I'm going to say it.
For sure.
And how is this different? And by the way, this, listeners, this is a pretty heavy duty clam, what feels like plastic.
Yeah. Heavyweight polypropylene.
Okay. And so not recyclable, reusable?
Well, the focus is reuse.
Reuse.
Yeah.
So what's different and what's innovative about this compared to something I could buy on Amazon that is a clamshell, plastic clamshell?
Yeah, for sure. Well, the key thing, you know, you mentioned Novolex, which is the parent company of Eco Products. And again, I think really encapsulates what you're talking about at the range of choice, right? Mm-hmm. Choice, innovation, and sustainability are the focus for Novolex. And this was a logical next step from an investment perspective, which is that when we think about the key sustainability attributes that most brand owners are looking for, it's recyclable, reusable, or compostable. And as Novolex, we are leaders in recyclability and we're leaders in compostability. But packaging generally has been wary of how we approach reuse for a variety of reasons. And this, so the container that we're referencing here relies on a system. It is very much oriented towards food service environments, really, that don't have a car involved, right? So if you're on a college campus, if you're in an airport, if you're in a senior living facility, if you're someplace where you're going to be presented food, but you don't want to necessarily sit in the cafeteria, you want to go back to your dorm room.
Yeah.
How we have a reuse model there that isn't single use is the key.
So but then you need a lot of vendors, say at an airport, to use the same kind of container and have some way to clean it and right?
And so what we're seeing is this nascent industry that's growing rapidly in terms of how people address those concerns. How do we collect them? How do we wash them? How do we replenish them? And incidentally, how do we track it from an asset perspective? Because when we do have a container that is that heavy, you've effectively given somebody that has something of value.
And I see a barcode on the back.
That's one of the key pieces, right? So when the student swipes a card, their dining program says, you've now taken this O2Go container. When they come back to the receptacle, they swipe their card and it goes back in and it credits their account back to say you've returned it. Because again, many of the things that we treat as single use can be reused.
Much more efficient than the old nickel or dime for a bottle from the grocery store.
Then you get deposit system?
Yes. Yeah. So this is brilliant. And so basically, I get it, I'm charged for it, and then when I return it, I get my money back, and it's clean.
Yeah.
In a closed cycle or a closed system again.
Effectively.
Got it. Effectively. That's fine. You could give me details that.
Sure.
But it sounds like a kind of an interesting, because I know Starbucks tried to have, you know, washable mugs, but they didn't really have a system to make it work. Like all of a sudden people show up with mugs and like, what?
Yeah. And from our perspective, the final frontier is the drive-through window. How to create a reuse system that will incorporate cars and vehicles and pick up and drop off and just all of the many things that can happen out in the real world. That's
real. I never thought of that. That's super cool. So if someone's going to, I'm not going to mention this restaurant because I haven't been there in 20 years, but if someone goes to a fast food drive up, you know, and they're charged whatever they're charged, 50 cents for the container, they can get that back next time. Or are these going to be like, are these a lot more than that? These are like,
those are typically dollars.
Really?
So, yeah. Well, that's what is going to be marked on the student's account. Yes.
It's worth it to return it.
Correct.
But it never really costs you anything.
Well, you're incenting that behavior.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. That's what we think about.
That's really brilliant.
Yeah.
That's cool. All right. Some other questions. And by the way, listeners, this is ProCo 360, best Colorado business podcast the last 3 years. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. And this podcast is for people who love Colorado and the stories of Colorado businesses and entrepreneurs. Today, I'm with Ian Jacobson, president of Eco Products. Go to ProCo360.com to subscribe to the newsletter, read my blog, link to sponsors, and catch books I'm listening to on Audible. One of the things that you're website says is that you can help companies establish a better green brand, essentially, by using your products and so forth. You know, some people call that greenwashing. Some people where do you fall on that?
That's a great question. From our perspective, you are signaling something to your customer when you make the choice of the package you put in their hands. And from our perspective, by whether or not this package makes it to the compost pile, the fact is, this is incenting, this is providing the team at Eco Products to do the advocacy work, to do the engagement work. Because when you think about, we are yes, we're a sales organization, we're a product development organization, but the resources we have in the field that focus on advocacy, connecting waste haulers to composters, working municipally with range of audiences to say, this is an approach to waste management that works.
Yeah.
So there is value to that brand association because we believe inherently in the work that we do. It's a mission-driven organization. Yeah.
And so if a company, I mean, what would you do if a company that had a terrible reputation for environmental destruction wanted to use your products to say, aren't we green?
Well, to signal,
aren't we green?
We are signaling that we certainly made a more responsible choice when it came to the coffee cup that they put in your hand in the waiting room.
Yeah.
I do not believe that the use of our cup would cover up other corporate sins, if you will.
Yeah.
It's not intended for that.
Yeah.
But look, the reality is we make choices. And procurement managers make choices every day. We're trying to say this is a preferable one.
Yeah. Hey, before we wrap up, I almost forgot. I want to talk about this whole about moving compost to where it needs to be.
Sure.
And then to where it's used.
Yeah.
I mean, is that an effective and efficient process as well?
I would say from our perspective, demand for compost, quality compost, as certified by the U.S. Composting Council, is one of the things where we focus on getting more demand for the finished goods. And so, because again, soil health is a real issue for the world. Erosion is an issue for the world. And ultimately, in its highest best use, it's driving carbon sequestration. Because the reality is the application and their studies we can point to, I can follow up with you later. The application of compost, EcoCycle is a great organization in Boulder, Colorado that's focused on carbon farming, which is effectively the application of compost in order to sequester carbon by growing more things. Mm-hmm. And the root structures of these things are frankly much larger than what you see above ground.
So talk about the scale of what's happening. You know, and I, as I mentioned earlier, I've been to A1. I've seen these massive rows of mounds of compost being turned and the heat that comes off and all. It's pretty impressive, really. But in your mind, how would you describe the scale of what we're able to actually, like, you know, if I take your products and they go into the compost system, like, what does that grow into?
Well,
how much?
I guess I don't know how to answer the how much question. Tell you is that the uses of compost are myriad, right? In terms of soil health, in terms of erosion control, right? When we think about construction projects, right? To apply compost, and there's certain states that have more progressive positions on this, where if you've got a highway project, it's a requirement at the final phase of that highway project to apply compost over effectively the scar. Right, those are great examples.
So things can grow.
One of the frustrations that we have is that the organic agriculture, well, I shouldn't say organic, but the agricultural community here cannot, well, here's a challenge. Compost cannot be marketed as a fertilizer, even though it has been used for years for exactly that purpose.
Really? That's a state law?
I think it's a federal regulation.
Wow.
So fertilizer is fertilizer and compost is a soil amendment, even though it's been used for centuries for just that purpose.
It seems like if you can educate people to put this in the right bin, you can tell them what compost does.
Yeah. Well, so, you'd think.
Yeah.
But again, it's there's limits. And
Maybe I should be putting compost on my lawn.
You should.
Yeah. All right. I'll talk to you about that. Before we wrap up, too, you're a B Corporation. And I don't want to go there yet. I still didn't get a full answer to what I'm wondering, which is, like, is every bit that you're composting being used productively to create compost?
No.
Really?
No. Well, there's plenty of parts of the country that don't have access to commercial composting. And so this is when I say the advocacy work of what EcoProducts does is trying to establish emerging composters, giving programs, frankly, working with them to connect them to waste generators to say, hey, this is a committed university, committed to using compostable packaging, looking for a compost partner that's willing to take that organic front of house stream, right? That's the work that we're doing to try to create that infrastructure. And it only happens through work.
And getting back to the B Corp piece. I mean, you're a B corporation, which means essentially you can be for the benefit of many versus the benefit of just shareholders.
Sure.
Right? So that must change a little bit in the way you focus and operate.
The B Corp certification had a profound impact on our business, not because it made us think differently about people, planet, profit. It's because of the B Lab assessment. And so I'm glad you asked the question, because for any listener who's wondering, take the assessment. It's online, it's free, and it will open your eyes to just common business decisions that you may or may not have considered the impacts of. So the benefit and the transition for EcoProducts for many years had a score that was certifiable to make us a publicly traded B Corp. I'm sorry, to make us a B Corporation, a publicly listed B Corporation. It took a certain set of ownership to commit to that corporate change. And again, that's a challenge. But the benefit that we experienced was holding ourselves to that standard, because you manage what you measure.
Yeah. And I would think that you attract the kind of employees that care about that kind of thing. So,
people are what make it all happen.
Yeah. Now, you're Colorado-based. Any particular reason? Is it because it was just founded here and that's where you grew? Or is this becoming a perfect home?
Absolutely a perfect home. It's certainly we're here because we were founded here.
Yeah.
But I would tell you that it is of a place, right? There is a firm grounding in the environment, particularly in Boulder, Colorado. For many years, we enjoyed access to commercial composting, which is currently obviously not available for our packaging at A1, which is something that we and others are working on changing. But that said, just that philosophy, right? If you think about zero waste ordinances in Boulder, right? There's very much a concerted effort to how do we do things different. Built into the culture of EcoProducts.
That makes sense. And I think in the general environment, you know, in which you operate, it makes sense. Now, last question for you. I mean, when you think about what's being put in landfills today versus what you think will be getting put in landfills in 20 years, you think we're going to make substantial progress? Is it going to be different?
Oh, it will definitely be different. If there's one thing we all agree on, is the changing composition of the waste stream coming out of the municipality. That we know. The question is, will our approach to landfill change? Two things that I think about when I answer that question. One is the availability of space, which we have no shortage of space here in Colorado. But if you think about the East Coast, and you think about the impacts of having to move waste further and further and further away when landfills get filled, that's a serious consideration. But ultimately, it comes down to value. Can we find real value in what we used to think was trash? Can that waste be viewed as raw material?
But don't you have to change the waste too, kind of with your product types? You have to change the waste to make it more valuable,
for sure,
as well as get more of it where it belongs.
For sure.
It's both.
What we consume. And again, this is where the complexities of the market show their face.
Yeah.
And so there's regulations that propose we're going to solve it. Colorado is proud to have one of the first EPR legislations, extended producer responsibility around packaging, that's emerging as we speak, the rules of which and how it's going to get rolled out. We're the first state to endeavor to do something this significant. That will change, right? When we start actually putting a structure around fees and incentives by material type, that will change the composition of what goes out in the market. And rent, again, from our perspective, change is an opportunity to address these challenges.
Yeah.
Because the status quo, and I would say decades of optimizing around what you talked about, that foam container. Why is it so cheap? Decades of optimizing to get as much volume around one solution, one way. Of course, the cost comes down.
Yeah.
So our cost will be more because it's early stage.
Yeah.
So give us 60 years and then ask us how
I hope
we're
it's
doing.
Not 60. I asked my question was 20 years. All right, we'll wrap up on that. I'm your host, Dave Taper. Today on ProCo 360, you've been listening to my conversation with Ian Jacobson, president of EcoProducts. Ian, glad to have you with me in the studio, and thanks for helping me way better understand your business, compostability, composting product, whole bit.
Yeah, thanks. It's a pleasure. Thanks for bringing a spotlight to Colorado companies.
Happy to do it. And listeners, glad you're here on ProCo 360, where we say live, work, love Colorado, because you and I and my guests can be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You make the show succeed by subscribing to the ProCo 360 podcast. If you haven't yet, it's a huge help if you submit a review in your app. Thanks again to our show sponsors, Via Technologies, Kinsley Meetings, Denver Angels, and Colorado Biz Magazine. That's the show, Live, Work, Love Colorado.